we are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep. The poor and the underclass are growing. Racial justice and human rights are non-existent. We have been lulled into a trance. They have made us indifferent to ourselves, to others. We are focused only on our own gain. That is their primary method of survival. Keep us asleep, keep us selfish, keep us sedated.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here's your host, Michael Storm.
Welcome to Toward Anarchy. I am Michael Storm. Thank you so much for joining me. As always, it is my pleasure to be here, and I appreciate the fact that you take the time to be here. I'm live. I'm worldwide across the Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org. That's where you can find them and all of the amazing voices that that come out across the network. And it is I'm excited. I'm pumped up. I'm hyped up. I jumped on the drums before the show and played some Iron Maiden and some Metallica and got the old blood pumping. But that was already a thing. That was already going, because I've been talking about here the last few weeks about getting back into the flow, getting guests back on the show. It's been a while. You know, we've had Dr. Dean Lloyd hanging out with us. He's just a regular, no big deal there. Having some other conversations with some other people, something we haven't done in a while, something since sort of network changes and things like that that were going on there. I haven't really made any adjustments because I've been distracted and running my business and making the comic book shop a huge success. That was one of the things that had me going this week. Yesterday was Free Comic Book Day. That's the thing they do every year where the companies give out they don't give out much of anything. Let me rephrase that. Comic book shops buy at a significant discount a large number of comic books to give out for free, and it is to get people interested in titles, things that they haven't read before, and to bring new and young readers into comic books. And I think we gave about 1,000 comic books away yesterday, and it was a huge success, and it was much bigger than the ones that we've had in the past, where the effort wasn't made. And we had 50 different titles to give away yesterday, and dozens of each copy. It was really great, and it went crazy. And then I woke up this morning to find that one of the books that we gave away, this Spider-Man number two, for it's, I think it's an advertisement for the next Spider-Man game, I think is what it is. This book blew up overnight, so we gave this book away to our customers, and it is selling on eBay right now for $25 to $40 an issue. So there's that early hype on it. So I've been distracted. I've been busy, good distracted, good busy. But I love my thing here. I love doing this, and I love getting a chance to talk with all the people. And I have some really fantastic shows coming up. They're already booked. Everybody except Vic. I have a email from him that I need to check out to double check. Vic's a retired NYPD detective who writes humorous books about the ineptitude, really, of Metropolitan Police and other topics. And he's just one of a streak of about 2 months of guests confirmed for just week after week after week here. We're going to talk to Tony Leonard. He's a career coach for creative people. This is something that I've talked about before, something that will be of interest to many friends and family and people that I know in real life, as well as I'm sure plenty of the listeners across the network and around the world. This career coach, he is a career coach for creative people, and he helps people place value on and in their creative work, something that we've talked about being important and being hard to do. for individuals. And some of us are more successful at it. My guest today is successful at it. J.B. Hilliard, he's the author of the Warminster series, and he also has a website slash magazine, digital magazine thing that he does where he helps people get published. And so I'm really excited to talk to him. I'm excited to talk to all these guests, or I wouldn't bother to book them, because I see, I don't know, hundreds of potential, certainly at least 60. I can guarantee I see at least 60 different potential people to have a conversation with in any given month, you know, going through their details and reading their bios and things like that and finding out about them. And so I'm picking and I'm choosing. We'll talk to Elizabeth Mickiewicz, and she is a former prisoner. She's an activist now. She was, you know, locked in a cage for political and social opinions, and at least while she was in there, she managed to start a career for herself in her creativity and creating a clothing line. And I thought it would be an interesting conversation to have with her, being a victim of the system and being someone who's come out the other side of it, doing what she feels she can to raise awareness about the problems with our prison system. So all these and more coming up over the next few weeks. It's just guest after guest after guest. And I thought it would be fantastic to kick it off with somebody I know, somebody I love, a really good friend of mine, a good friend of Liberty, author Michael Howell. You'll know if you visit the website towardanarchy.com, he's one of the very few people that has a sort of permanent space on the website there. And his book, The United Deep State of America, Shadow Government's Republic, is always up there being advertised as available for people, because I think that it's an important work. I think that what Michael does and what he's done over the years trying to expose the New World Order and the global agenda and to end the Fed and has been a massive effort, and I think he's been very successful at it, as I was saying, because he's reached a lot of people, and I imagine, I know that those of us who do stuff like this, I remember Ken Riggs saying to me on more than one occasion, and this is a sort of lifelong libertarian, pseudo-anarchist, minarchist, one of the first people to number 7 in the Libertarian Party. It started right in my backyard there. And I just remember him saying on more than one occasion, it'd just be, you know, nice if just once some of this that I talk about, some of these, if somebody just once picked it up. And I think he was always glad to know that I did. I picked it up real fast and I ran with the ball. I imagine, Michael Howell, that you've had your days where you wonder if you should just keep going or not. Michael, you there? We got
you. I am.
There you are.
Can you hear
okay.
me?
I hear you now. There we go.
Okay.
Awesome. Yeah, no, I'm just saying, it can be hard to put importance, put value on the creative work, writing, and philosophizing, and beautiful works of art, and these things. And you're somebody who has been successful at it, and it's always a pleasure to just talk with you as a person, but also as a person who's successful in doing the things that I think a lot of people aspire to, saying their piece and doing the hard work to put it out there.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. What an intro. This is one of those shows I always love doing, because you almost forget you're being interviewed. You're talking to a friend. But
I love it.
Yeah, this is definitely one of the shows whenever I'm asked, I pretty much drop what I'm doing. I quit doing interviews a couple of years ago, not for any reason other than I just had a lot going on in my life. And, you know, there's one or two shows, this being one of the two shows, that whenever I'm asked, I drop what I'm doing. And always a pleasure to come on. But back to what you were saying, I heard your intro. I don't know, I guess I was muted or whatever. But, yeah, there are days when you definitely want to give up, and you don't really feel like your message is being heard. And right now I'm battling that, because I've got another book that I need to get out, and I even have a really big-name person who's going to write the foreword for it, and he's really ramped up about it. But you get those days that you were just talking about where you just don't want to go on because you don't feel like you're making progress. You know,
well,
it's just
such a huge mountain to climb, right? There to really make a visible. Okay, I liken what we try to do in sort of getting this the truth out there to the same thing that happens to me at the comic book shop. Go figure. So we have 60,000 bulk issues on the floor, comic books that we sell for $1 to $2 a piece, and that's a lot of comic books. It takes up a huge amount of space. But the thing is to get people to keep coming back and wanting to learn more, wanting to buy more books, wanting to dive in. They have to know that new stuff is out there, that there's something new for them the next time that they go to dig through the boxes. And when you take, you know, a couple hundred books, maybe 1,000 books a week, and drop that into 60,000 books, it's, you know, it's like dropping an eyedropper of water into a swimming pool. It doesn't necessarily have a giant effect.
Exactly. That's one of the problems that I'm having right now. Whenever I sit down to write these books, I don't want to write a New World Order book because they're a dime a dozen, and they're really not that good, to be honest with you. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. there's some good ones out there. I'm not knocking, you know, they're really are. But what I want to do is I want to write a book that separates myself, that isn't a book that is a rewording of another book that you read, or, you know what I mean, that has new information. So whenever I approach the deep state, one of the things that I wanted to ask myself is, what do people think the deep state is, and what is the deep state really? And a lot of people think, get the shadow government and the deep state confused. You know, they yeah. refer to them as one and the same, and it's not. There really is a separation between the shadow government and the deep state. The shadow government is, you know, at your table, so to speak, you know, running the world from that table, that shadowy, smoke-filled room that we all imagine these bastards planning our future at. You know, that's your shadow government. Your deep state is just your everyday American who works for your FBI, CIA, or, you know, goes to work and perpetuates the shadow government's initiative, so to speak. So anyway, long story short, I wanted to break down the two and show that the shadow government uses the deep state to make progress in their New World Order agenda, global agenda, however you want to word it. So that was one of the challenges I had, is I didn't want to release a deep state book that was another release of another deep state book. So what could separate myself? So like when you get to the chapter like deception and politics, I talk about how they use politics as the deception. It's like the Antifa thing or even the QAnon. That was all deceptive. Mm-hmm. You know, that was what it was. So there's elements of new stuff to tell the story of the deep state in that book. But really what separates that book, I think, is I have chapters about individualism versus collectivism, republic versus democracy. But what I really like about that book is I break down the difference between the shadow government and the deep state. Right. And that title, I really love the title in it, United Deep State of America, a Shadow Government's Republic, because it really shows that the possession of the deep state belongs to the shadow government there.
Right. Yeah, well, okay, so, yeah. That is the something that you said there, whatever you want to call it. That's part of the problem, right, is sort of nailing down the differences. And I think that is something that is extremely important, because it speaks to what we can do as individuals in terms of, you know, directing our energy towards ideas and things that they hold captive, and on what level they hold it captive, because there are certain battles that we can fight that we can win, because, well, we kind of don't really have to fight them. We just have to take ourselves and our health and our wealth out of the system and stop supporting it. And then there are some of these bigger battles, longer battles, the battle to end the Federal Reserve and this sort of banking cartel's grip on the world and the money supply and the manipulation of it. That's a much larger battle, but at the same time, it's still a battle that we have to take one conversation at a time. You know, you're talking about sort of rehashing information that's out there and not wanting to do that in your material. And I have to commend you on that, because this is something that is very true of an understanding with me. And it's one of the reasons that I don't read a lot when it comes to philosophy or economics. I have an educated understanding of these things beyond the need to necessarily spend any more academic time on it. And so what I need is something new. I need something different. I need a new way of looking at things. I don't want to hear the same old stuff. And I have this problem with a lot of the economic books that I see coming out recently. It was even one that the Mises Institute was pushing that I thought was just a sort of rehash of economics in one lesson, you know, and maybe it needs to be rehashed. Maybe it needs to be revoiced for a new generation of people and people who maybe think differently or absorb information a little bit differently or through different means. Maybe that's true, but it's certainly not for me. I'm looking for that special touch that you're talking about. That's something different, something more important than just spitting out another piece of work.
Yeah, and another thing that really got to me was whenever I was looking at what's out there, the information, kind of like you. I mean, we're all researchers. We all want to grow on this, and that's why you don't want to keep reading the same things every single day, because there's no growth in it.
Yes. So
that was one of the things that I looked at whenever I sat down to outline this book. What new information can I bring? And I not to circle back to the same point, but the one thing that I kept finding that people were confusing about the deep state is they didn't really understand the deep state. It's kind of like economics. You know, a war consists of a lot of battles, and that's what's happening in society right now, is we're fighting a whole bunch of battles, and some we're winning, some we're losing, some, you know, whatever. But what we're not realizing is we could win the war. We're fighting all these battles. We could flat out win the war by understanding economics, because that is the root of every single battle you're fighting, is being funded and perpetuated because of economics, because of the Federal Reserve, because of central banking, because of global, the restructuring of global finances. All of that, all of these battles that we're fighting, they're fictitious, they're made up for the division so that the economics, which are seen as a transfer of wealth. And I know I'm all over the place because there's so many points right now that I want to make, but what we're seeing is a transfer of wealth globally. That's why you're seeing the destruction of the middle class, and that's why you're seeing a lot of corporations going under, a lot of small businesses going on under, because you're seeing that transfer of wealth. Now, inside the transfer of wealth, you have transfer of resources. And that's another thing that you're seeing. That's why you're seeing all these processing plants
burn down. And transfer of power.
Right.
That's the other thing, and a transfer of power. All of those. It's a multi-layered, multi-tiered thing. It's the pyramid. It is what I talk about a lot on the show, and that is finding places to direct that energy where it's most, where you're going to be most successful at it. Understanding the enemy and the way that he thinks and the way that he works and the way that he's structured is what this is what the book does for you.
What I believe is key to all of this is economics. I really do. I believe if everyone you talked about just now, everyone's trying to figure out where to direct their energy at, there's no better place to direct it in economics. And the reason being is we know that they fund both sides of every war. We know that they're trying to transfer all of our, basically make us dependent on the government. They're trying to do away with our money. The best thing that we could do is understand money, understand the difference in value and worth. I'm finding so many adults don't understand the basics of economics. I'm not talking about all the stuff that you need degrees to understand, like fractional reserve lending and all that. I'm just talking about basic stuff. What is the difference in money versus currency? What's the difference in value versus worth? And so many people don't understand that. So I believe if people, and there's a reason they took economics out of high school, for the same reason they took civics out of high school. They don't want you to understand your political structure, your political system, or your economic system and your economic structure. Because if you do, that's where the change is going to happen.
Well, right, because you can look at it and you can see that it's all propped up, that it's all fake, that there's no...
Well, economics is where you feel the pain the most. You know what I mean? If they passed a bathroom bill, you know, where chicks with dicks can go in bathrooms or whatever, that's not going to affect me. But every single economic policy affects 320 million Americans. That affects everybody. So that's why I'm saying get away from the division. Get away from the fictitious fights and understand what they're doing economically. Because when you do, Henry Ford said it best. If you understood your economics, how economics works, there would be a riot in the streets by morning. There's your solution.
I think that's one of the reasons that you and I click so quickly and in understanding and like to speak with each other about these things because of the economics. It's such a simple and easy thing to understand once you set aside the illusion of money and the manipulation of it that is presented through our television screens and our computers and our phones. And once you remove all of that and focus on currency, money, understanding how wealth is really made, what wealth really means, how to value something, how to place value in something. These are very simple things to do, but they're ignored. Exactly right. You said
everybody wants to get rich, but nobody wants to learn how to get wealthy.
Right.
Everybody wants to be worse. Everybody wants to be worth something, but they don't value themselves. You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
These are ways that people can have these kind of conversations and tie it into economics and help them understand. You know, the best analogy I can give you for understanding value and worth is an economic analogy. It's a personal analogy. Know your worth and value it. You know? That's a self-reflecting definition of what's the difference in value and worth. That's a perfect analogy for it. You didn't have to go into the long, drawn-out economic degrees. You know what I'm saying? Same thing with money and currency, you know?
Absolutely right. You take these simple words at face value and you apply them and you get exactly what you should, because it's economics, it's money, it's numbers, it's math, it's kind of a interesting game that I think that we play with ourselves. We have to be, right? We have to be fooling ourselves for it to get this far, for these people to have manipulated so much, to literally, I love how the Fed here lately has, we've ratcheted up half a point or something like that, and we're not going to do it again next time. And then they kick it up another half point or a point, and we're not going to do it again next time. We're pretty sure inflation's cooling, things are calming down, we're getting control of this, and we won't do it next time. And they just did it just again the other day, and I sit back and I laugh at it, because it just keeps happening over and over again. You just keep doing the same thing over and over again. The definition of insanity, it's complete insanity. And that's what you do it at, complete insanity, is you sit back and laugh at it, or you're a part of it.
Yeah, it's kind of like that meme with that snake with its tail in its mouth. You know which one I'm talking about, where the snake's eating its own tail. And it's
right.
The Fed raised their interest rate for the 10th time since March 22. And the reason that they're raising the interest rates is to avoid inflation. But every single economist is telling you that this is going to cause a recession. I mean, they're raising it to avoid a recession, but every single economist is telling you that this is going to cause a recession. So you can't tax yourself into prosperity. And that's what the Fed, along with the Department of Treasury, that's what they think they can do. They think they can borrow themselves into prosperity. Well, to any person, normal person, we know that's not true. And even economists know that. So going back to what you said a while ago, is they're playing along, because even the smartest person, even the dumbest person, has to know this doesn't make sense, our economics. Right. If we operated under an Austrian system, then we wouldn't have this debt. We wouldn't have all this inflation, obviously hyperinflation. We wouldn't have the derivatives problem that we have. People talk about the national average, but, man, once you add derivatives in there, it's incalculable, you know? We don't even know how much we owe these world bankers. Nope. It's incalculable. But here's the thing. Here's another thing that people don't understand. Regardless of what the national debt is, it's mathematically impossible to pay off. And people always say, Michael, no, it's not. You know, if the national debt was $1, you would not be able to pay it off. And here's why. Go back to the beginning, 1913. Every time a person or a country borrows money, what's attached to it? Interest, right? So just going back to this fictitious scenario, 1913, America says, okay, Federal Reserve, we passed the Federal Reserve Act of 1913, and now it's time to get y'all involved in our economy. Let's make our first loan with you guys. We need $1 billion. So Federal, okay, here's $1 billion. As soon as the first dollar came off the printing press, it became mathematically impossible to pay off because there's interest attached to it. All we get is the principal. All the Federal Reserve accepts for payment is Federal Reserve notes. So how do you pay back that billion? All you got was $1 billion, but the interest, the payback is going to be $1 billion plus interest. So how do you pay it back?
You can't pay it back in Federal Reserve
notes. It's mathematically impossible.
Yeah. And that's the game, you know, right? If you could pay it off in another way, you could theoretically end the debt.
You should be able to pay it off with reserves. You know, and don't get me on Fed rates.
Not yet. You know,
I mean, I'm not talking about interest rates. I'm talking about the Fed fund rates that banks. Yeah, that's
the banks pay. Yeah,
and they can borrow money between each other, and they have to have a certain percentage at all banks. This goes to all banks. They have to have a certain amount of money in the bank at the end of the day. That's the Fed rate, and if they don't, then they can borrow money within each other. So two banks borrowing money from each other, guess what they just entered into? Fractional reserve lending. What did they do? Created money out of thin air. All because the Federal Reserve says you need to have this amount of money in the bank every day.
Well, we're seeing the effects of that slowly happening again. It's really funny because so one of my business partners, they just went through probate on a house that he sold, and supposedly everything came back fine. Well, the guy who just bought it or is still trying to get the title, whatever, he comes back and he says there's these 10 points, and they're saying that these things have to be dealt with before we can ultimately finish the paperwork on this house, and he can take legal possession of it. And the times, it's hilarious because the loan changed hands multiple times. The loan was paid off by the original owner, but the monies may not have gone to the people who actually held the loan at the time. And over that time period, guess what time period? 2008. 2008,
oh, wow.
bank collapsed. And it was bought out by Bank One or somebody, one of the bigger guys. And so it was the same thing. It's just hilarious that looking at the documentation and finding out about there's these two banks involved in this entire process. There's this house from the 1990s up through 2011 or 12, something like that. And both times are banking crises where these little banks disappeared, and this loan, this house, this man's real property got lost in this paperwork somewhere.
Amazing. Wow. Yeah. 2008 is a bad time to be holding the bag, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, apparently, for at least one bank anyway.
Yeah.
It's amazing because of course, that was my point, is that we're seeing this happen again right now in this time period of, 2021, 22, slowly building up. People like myself and you have been talking about the problems with these banks and with the system that they use forever, and that this is all that ends up happening, is that they consolidate. Little banks follow the same things that the banks do and fail at it because they just don't have the number of depositors and can't shuffle the paperwork around, don't have the political standing, whatever it is that keeps them in business, and they get absorbed by the bigger ones. And we see the cycle continue. Nothing actually changes within the system, but the names and the faces of the people behind the system. We got to go into a break there. I'm talking to author Michael Howell. Go to towardanarchy.com to follow along, including a link to the United Deep State of America, a shadow government's republic. You can purchase that book, and also the Fighting the Tyranny website, where you can find out more about Michael. We'll be right back.
the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a 2-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around, and be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy with Michael Storm.
Let's go!
Okay, so go to towardanarchy.com if you want to follow along. As always, that's the place to do it. Look for May 7th. You'll find the links there. You'll see my guest is author Michael Howell. We've got a link there for the United Deep State of America, Shadow Governments Republic. That's Mike's book. And then he's working on another one right now, and that's getting a little bit closer. We'll talk about that here in a minute. We'll see where he's at on that. Also, you can visit the Fighting the Tyranny website, his blog, and collection of his works and information about himself and other things that he is interested in, a lot like my little website. It says a lot about me and who I am, and Michael's website does as well. It's a WordPress site, fightingthetyranny.wordpress.com. That link is up there. I also shared a couple other links for you, just some things I found of interest for sure. Something about Isaac Newton. Newton and some math and stuff that he worked on in the Bible, you know, sort of reading the Bible and trying to predict doomsday. And I guess it's just around the corner. So I thought that was kind of fun. I don't know what to think of things like that. I always think when I see something like that, and I'm not the world's most learned Bible person, but I do know that God said that no one would know, that no one could tell you when the end of the world was coming, when his return was. You know, I do know this for a fact. So I'm guessing that Sir Isaac Newton got it wrong, if any of that stuff is right at all. This is the spot where it all comes back to, and if we go back to that, and it says you can't know this, then you can't know it. And so I go with that every time I hear somebody predicting the end of the world. I believe that's right. Whether God said it or not, I believe it's an accurate statement. No one knows when this thing's all coming to an end. There are too many variables involved where this itty-bitty little speck of dust on an itty-bitty little speck of dust in an itty-bitty little speck of a dust galaxy. It's in a huge universe and multiverses, and who knows? It's just a lot bigger than us, and we have this problem with, I think, reducing ourselves to our real size. Sometimes our heads are a little bit bigger than we really are. And just one more of these important, interesting stories to consider. Another link that's there for you is a story about a decades-long conspiracy that's not a conspiracy. It's never been a conspiracy. It's always been a fact. And that's geoengineering using planes, pumping metals and other experimental crap into the air. There's just this a current ABC news story, just some information on geoengineering technologies and how they plan to combat the climate crisis over the coming decades. It's not a conspiracy. It's just a matter of understanding maybe some subtleties in there. TowardAnarchy.com is where that's all at. And do me a big favor, support the network. RepublicBroadcasting.org is the place to go there. And if you can, click on the donate button on the left-hand side there. Make a little donation. Make it so my voice and all of the voices across Republic Broadcasting Network are able to come to you, continue to come to you every day as we do. If you don't like the technology thing, pick up the phone, give the network a call, and talk to somebody, and they can tell you how to best support them. Maybe you have a business. Maybe you could use some advertising. Call up, talk to them, find out if there's a spot, maybe a show you want to see if you can get your business in there and help support, and vice versa, be supported by. The other thing to do is to click the Shop RBN button there, or shoprbn.com. Just go there directly and support those people who decided they want to advertise and do business with Republic Broadcasting Network and with us, all of the voices across the network. So please do that. I appreciate it. I stand to gain nothing from telling you about these things. There's nobody pays me to do this. There's no I do it because it's the right thing to do, because I'm lucky to be here, because all of us are lucky to be here at this time in this place and to be able to have the voice that we do. And I can bring you conversations like this one that I'm having with Michael Howell, my guest, who is an expert in understanding this and is trying to these topics that we always talk about. He's done them. He's lived them. He's studied them. He's put them into practice in the real world, and he's come up with some particular conclusions and some ways to do some things and some ideas about tackling it. And Michael, I wish I could argue with you. I really do. I wish I could tell you you were wrong. I wish I could point to a particular flaw in your logic. That's not to say that you've never been wrong or won't ever be wrong, or that you haven't had some flawed logic in some of your reasoning at some point in your life. I'm just saying that in the conversations that we've had and the material that I've read from you and the books that you've written, I don't find anything objectionable. There's nothing that I can point at and go, well, this is questionable. I think that it's all real. I certainly see it in front of me. But I can't tell you you're wrong. So I have to then ask you, what do we do about it? Where does it go? And what I already know those things. I think everybody does too.
I know it. I know what you're saying, and I agree 100%. I wish we could argue too. I wish we could have a healthy debate because the audience benefits from that.
Both
of us
benefit
from that because
we
grow. But we can still have that growth, and the audience can still benefit from having two like-minded people talk by staying on point. Like whenever we're talking about, you know, I'm just randomly saying this, but when we were talking about value versus worth, you know, there's a lot of people who don't understand that. So, you know, you could talk about it. You could have those kind of directive conversations about that, even though we both agree. I guess one of us played devil advocate or something, but yeah, you're right.
I don't think anybody would disagree with any of these things, but on that particular topic, it's a thing that I like to talk about a lot because it's something that I personally have dealt with, and I think that all creative people have dealt with, and that's that understanding the difference between valuing who we are and what we do and why we do it over what wealth we get in return for what we do. It can be hard to place value on that in both of those ways, and it's the same conversation from a different angle. It's the radio magic is what it is. It's the saying something to somebody in a different way because they hear it differently, and if you say it a couple of different ways, different people hear it and they get the same message, the same information gets across.
Another way of looking at it is a pastor is preaching to a church. Well, the congregation knows the message, but what they're doing is they're learning the message deeper so that they can take it out into the streets. So shows like this, even though your audience knows the message of liberty, you know what I mean? We could teach them the depths of liberty, so to speak, so that that way they could take the message of liberty to the streets. It's a very good question you ask, and it's really got my mind racing. Is how can conversations like this be productive for both host and guest as well as audience in a world that seems to not care about solutions but only wants to get caught up in the problems? And this is why, and I'm sorry to your listeners if I sound like a broken record. I'm kind of purposely meaning to sound like a broken record, but I'm sounding this way and I'm saying these things because it is the solution, and it comes back to economics. It comes back to understanding what's the division for, is so that we can transfer our sovereignty to them. Well, who is them? It's international bankers. Well, why do they want our sovereignty? Because Mayor Amschel Bauer said it best, give me control of the nation's currency and I care not who makes its laws. Why? Because once you control the currency, you control the laws. So it's like the Federal Reserve, a dollar is just their product. To us, it's a dollar. But to them, it's just a product. It's nothing more than ink on a paper that they go and start their printers up and print out. They use their product for the transfer of wealth because they know we want their product. So that's why you're seeing the product manipulation, i.e. interest rates and all this shady economic policy surround. Economic policy should be so simple that anyone should understand it, right? I mean, economic policy should never get this complex that you need a PhD to understand your basic economics. I mean, that's got to be a sign that...
Of course, that's what they really want you to believe, right? That there is something more complicated to it, but it really isn't. That's what we've been trying to say. It's really not that complicated. It's not that hard to understand.
No, and again, economics is very easy to understand once you understand Keynesian economics. Once you understand Austrian economics.
Yes, once you understand that there's two or three or, you know, that there's more than one thought about how money should be handled, you realize real quickly that the reason Keynesian economics is used as a model by the state is because it supports the state.
Yep. The best way that whenever I first got into economics 20 plus years ago, you know what taught me more than any economics books today? Understanding the tally stick. When I understood the tally stick, I said, there's money. That's what money is. And you know what it was? It was nothing more. Now, tally stick is a good illustration between currency and money. Currency is a means of exchange. Money is your physical gold or whatever. Well, that's what they did. They took their physical money and they got a tally stick. The tally stick was split in half. The king kept one as a receipt and half and you went out and shopped, you know, get whatever. And they marked how much money you had left on the stick. That's showing you right there that currency can be nothing more than a wooden stick. It was the money that the stick represented as currency. So the money was back in the vaults or whatever. You see what I'm saying? That's a good illustration of the difference between money and currency.
I love that example because that's one of my – of course, I don't – let's see. I think that my first real view of the – of the stick was it was from Bill Still and his Money Masters. I was already fine economically. I'd had my economics in one lesson. I'd read that many years before, but the actual tally stick itself and the history of it, I think it was Bill Still that showed me that, and I just love seeing that in Bill's work because I knew right then and there that was one of those simple little things that shows that it's such a manipulation, because you see right there, you see the stick, you see the idea of it. This stick represents a real thing, something that's really there, and you can take the stick back there and exchange it for that real thing. There's something there, and when you do that with the dollar, there's nothing there. You can't take the dollar and trade it back for what created it.
No, it even says it on the dollar bill. This is, this is legal tender or debt. You know, that's all a dollar is debt. There's nothing back in it. You know,
well,
at
isn't
least
it a sad thing when you have to legalize a thing that you have to eat? It's not, if you have to normalize something, it's not normal, right?
Yeah. Nor, you don't normalize normal. You normalize abnormal.
Right. You can gain an understanding about the abnormal and accept that this is a real thing, but you don't have to normalize it. We're seeing a lot of that in society right now, aren't we?
Oh, yeah, normalization of abnormal. The normalization of abnormality. That's what I always say.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to write that than to say it.
Yeah.
A lot easier to write it than to say it, but that's what we're seeing. We're seeing the normalization of abnormality. And it's crazy. I mean, it's getting crazier, and I'm not sure that people really understand what the fight really is. Mm-hmm. If they're hung up in the partisan politics, then they're part of the problem, not part of the solution. You can't go to a rigged game and then expect the referees to make a call. I mean, it's rigged. They're going to go by script, right? Well, same thing in politics. You can't say that the political system is rigged and then expect the political system to come up with a solution. I mean, that just makes no sense to me. You can't sit here and preach that presidents are selected, not elected, and then cry over a rigged election when you have been telling me for years that presidents are selected. So I don't understand. I don't think people really understand what's going on. I think they cling to parties, to flags, to symbols, to what this person says, and they're not looking at fruits. I could sit on your show and say everything nice and sweet and everything, but do my fruits bear that? If not, then I just came on your show and made an ass out of myself and don't believe in what I'm saying myself. And therefore, I'm not going to have any real solutions to any problems or any conversation that we have during the show, because I'm not representing myself truthfully, because I need to understand what's going on before I can be a part of the solution.
Well,
and I think
really,
that's what's going on. I don't think people understand what the problem is, but they're trying to be the solution to it.
I talked about it last week on the show that everybody is in search of a solution to a problem that doesn't exist, and that problem is authority. Authority doesn't exist, so how do you fight something that doesn't exist, especially when you don't understand it and when you participate in it from the inside? And my solution to that is a real simple one. It's that you stop playing the game. You just take your energy, your time, your money, your health, your wealth, your being, your love, loved ones, all of it, out of it, as far out of it as you can get. And I'm not talking about running off and hiding in a cave. If you want to do that, that's perfectly fine. It's, you know, arm some hamsters with swords and shields and take over the world. If that's what you want to try to do, just watch out when you come to my property. We generally don't otherwise have a problem. It's this other group that comes out of it, these controllers, these manipulators, that they claim that they're playing the game along with us, that we're all part of this game and that we're all just doing our part to make it all work. But that's not true. It's just not true. They don't do anything for us. Everything that they say that they do for us is a complete lie. It's some fabrication in a form of a law or an appearance of meeting some previous mandate that existed 200 years ago on some piece of paper that they don't really pay any attention to anymore. And it's so obvious that everyone has to be fooling themselves to believe that this thing works anymore. I don't know how many times I did it this last week. It must have been so many people that I talked to just in passing that I mentioned the thing about the Constitution of no authority, the idea that, look, you know, you can sit here and talk all you want about your Constitution and your democracy, but the fact is that we are where we are, and the Constitution, that democracy, playing along with the system, playing the game, got us here or was incapable of preventing us from getting here. Either way, it failed, and we need to be looking at a new paradigm of leaders and to shed this idea that there's any such thing as authority, that any small group of any size thinks that it has it's the land. They own the land. They collect the it's just everything. It's everywhere. And we have a huge fundamental shift ahead of us.
Yeah, and the big shift is right on the cusp, and we're about to see it. But we're about to see the birth of Zygmunt Brzezinski's big dream when he wrote Between Two Ages. And mm-hmm. that is, I'm not talking about the singularity. I think we're many moons down the road from that,
right?
But you're about to see a lot, and I don't want to go all New Ageism, but same way that the philosophy side of New Ageism is about to have their shift, the technocratic side is about to have their shift too. And you're about to see Zygmunt Brzezinski's dream of Between Two Ages come to fruition, and when that happens, you're going to see, we've already seen a merge between Silicon Valley and tech and Washington, as well as Wall Street, New York. But whenever the big paradigm shift, and they're still waiting for a couple of transfer of power, a couple of little small things to happen. But anyway, when the technocrats make their paradigm shift, it's game over. And that's why this is so critical, because there's certain points that we get to that there's no turning back.
Right.
There's 30,000 gun laws on the books. That's 30,000 laws you'll never get reversed. Once it's on the books, that's done. I used to be a policy writer. I can tell you firsthand. Once a law is on the books, you're not going to get it repealed. Good luck.
Yeah, there's the only thing that you can hope for is that they come along and they step on someone like me who doesn't put up with their crap. And beginning June 10th, I will be suing the state of Kansas, the county of Shawnee, the DA, the detective, and their lying scumbag witness, complainant, whatever. And if they fall back on that idea that it's the law, they've got to fight ahead of them, because I'm prepared to stand up for my natural right to defend myself without doing anything until they take my life away from me, and that's what they're going to have to do. You're absolutely right about this thing about the idea that these laws won't get overturned, because I've made this argument to people in regard to specifically the gun laws on the books, is that almost none of these gun laws have ever faced a constitutional challenge. When they do, they fail.
Well, one gun law is unconstitutional. There's 30,000. Well, we don't really know the number. It's up. It's upwards of 30,000. If there's one, that's one too many.
Oh, but so, those are the easy ones that you can look at and you can go, that's a gun law. What's worse than that is all the other laws that come along after that that cool gun ownership, the things that they
That's where I was going.
Yeah, of course you were.
That's exactly where I was going. That's the 30,000 gun laws that we know about. That's not the guns that were taken through VA directives, Veterans Administration, you know. Mm-hmm. Wasn't some states, when you pass marijuana, a medical card law, that hampers gun rights. Yeah. So we're seeing a backdoor, and people think that, you know, their red line in the sand is when they come for the guns. They've already come for the guns.
They've won.
They came for the guns a long time ago. You are so far behind the fight that you don't even know we're in battle. That scares me. The fact that you're saying your red line is when they come for the guns, and there's 30,000 gun laws on the books already, tells me you don't even know that we're in a battle.
Nope.
I mean, you know, and this is the same mentality that's going to lead these people to a civil war. And I'll be the first one to tell you, when y'all have y'all civil war, I'm not on either one of y'all's team, and I will shoot both of y'all in the face equally. Okay?
So y'all keep y'all stupid division.
Y'all keep y'all stupid, perpetuated, manufactured divisions to y'allself.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Me and my wife's going to sit on the porch, and we're going to laugh at y'all, and we're going to shoot anyone in the face who comes on our property.
How is the better half? How's Melissa?
Oh, she's great. You said it best. She is my better half. She's grounded me so much in this fight because you know how it is. I mean, we've been doing this for 20 years, and whenever me and Melissa got together, you know, she says slow down, you know, just take a load off without having to say it. And she's my rock.
Nice, love that. Having that better half is an amazing thing. I know that.
Well, you know, she wrote the foreword. You know, she wrote the foreword for my book.
Yeah.
So it's
fantastic. I think it's great that the two of you can actually work together like that. You know, my wife and I are fantastic. 25, 6, 7 years now. We're closing out on 30 years. But I don't think we would ever write a book together. I don't know. Maybe.
Oh, you should. You're very knowledgeable, man. I'd definitely get one of your books.
I appreciate that. It's bound to happen someday.
I'm writing two more books right now, and I'm writing my first non-political book, actually.
Really?
Yeah, I'm writing one called Production and Manufacturing in a Globalized Economy. So I'd still touch on globalism, but it's not from the political side. It's from the manufacturing and production side.
Yeah. No,
but before that book comes out, I've got another political book coming out called Secret Societies, The Hidden Hand of Globalism.
Right. How far along are you on that?
Not as far as I need to be, Mike. Not as far as I need to be.
But
I got with, I reached out to another author and radio show host and friend of mine, Brad Zolas. And you may know him from Awaken Nation and some other projects, but he's writing the foreword for it. And he also designed the cover for it. So I'm really excited about that book.
Yeah. That's cool. I think I hear the music in the background. I think that's our cue, man. We're done. It's so great talking to you. I just love talking to you. I love you, and I love what you do. And I'm so thankful for people like yourself. And I wish you just the best of luck, you and Melissa. And I hope to talk to you again real soon.
Oh, I love you, brother. We need to catch up off air sometime.
Yeah, let's do that.
Absolutely.
Let's sit down and have a conversation where we can use some other language and topics.
There you go. Thanks for having me, Mike.
Take care, my friend. And we'll see the rest of you next week.
Bye-bye.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.